Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 112, James Rugg. You probably don't know James' name very well because he kind of keeps a low profile, but he has a company called software called Price Checker 2, and where I've been fortunate enough to be able to work with it for the last couple months and using it for some big wholesale lists. And you could run it through, and it compares the UPCs and takes it out to Amazon, gives you all that stuff that you see in other software do. But this one was cool because there were some issues, and I was able to work with James right one-on-one, and he'd fix that issue. As soon as I'd find something, boom, he'd fix it. And I did, I think it was 20 or 28,000 item file, and you know, it handled it. So very cool. In this first segment, we speak Brexit. James is from the UK, and we speak quite a bit about it because I'm interested in it because we're expanding into Europe. And so to understand that market and how now, you know, with Germany being separate, I think there's an opportunity. And in the second segment, we really get into what his software can do to help you really identify that opportunity. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest is, he's a long way away. Let's just say it that way. He is across the pond, as they say in England, James Rugg. Welcome, James.
Hey, thanks, Stephen. It's good to be with you. I am indeed across the pond. That's right.
You are across the pond. You are in the Brexit
thick
of it, aren't you?
We are. We're kicking off in this country. You can't believe that the Brits really do have this amount of passion. We really have come out of the woodwork on this one.
Well, you know, this has nothing to do with us, but I got to ask that question. You know, is it a younger generation pushing the separation for the identification? Is that what you feel like?
Hey, do you know what? It's the opposite.
It's the old people. They want to go back to the way it was.
You know what? I think they do. I think the youngsters, you know, see big open world and just opportunities everywhere and just cannot figure out why we, you know, why we would want to kind of step away from that. And the sort of older folk, more senior generation, have that sense of identity and sovereignty, and they've kind of seen stuff. And so they were the ones, when you look at the demographic, it was the sort of over 40s, 50s, and anyone who's been sort of disenfranchised through the, you know, the industrialization in the UK over the last 30, 40 years, especially up in the kind of northeast where we did formerly have a lot of industry, those guys voted out. The youngsters en masse were all Remainers.
And what kind of industries got decimated?
Well, you know, manufacturing globally has, but I think prescient to us in the UK, I would say fishing and farming.
Okay. And so there are other people coming in and taking those jobs, right?
You know,
lower price.
Certainly in terms of fishing, which was huge up in the northeast, we kind of just lost quota, we lost our water, we lost the right to you know, fish, because it got shared out. So stuff like it's really been the quotas, it's really been the restriction that's been brought about through EU regulation as they've opened the market to everyone, that's kind of seen us kind of end up with less of the pie. And obviously that's had a net effect on our GDP, we feel, and, you know, jobs and employment. So a lot of people, when they felt the pain over these 30 years, I think the downside risk to that generation and that demographic was very little from exiting, because, you know, how much worse can it be? Whereas in the metropolis, in the sort of higher sort of net worth areas in the cities, and with the youngsters, of course, you know, the downside risk of leaving and changing the status quo and taking away opportunities which are already proving to be worthwhile, that was big. So why would we rock the boat?
It's a lot to lose. I mean, the potential was big losses, So from an e-commerce point of view, it sounds like an opportunity for now, right? Because if the markets are splitting, right? So if I mean, I, and maybe I'm incorrect in this. I know Amazon has a presence in UK. I know they have a presence in Germany, right? And so probably in the past, that stuff was probably moved and shared and that kind of thing. Does it now become more complicated, or it will once this is all done, because now there are different taxing districts and different regulations and all that kind of jazz?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm not obviously no one's a pro, and no one expected this vote to come about. So I don't know if people really invested the hundreds of millions of dollars into market research. I genuinely think they haven't. You know, we've got, you know, the Bank of England, the the ECB, really in a huge state at the moment. The market's, you know, doing what it's doing. I think sterling's down another massive amount. They're talking about the Italian banks with exposure to sterling now being in serious trouble. So I don't think anyone knows. In terms of me being a businessman and me understanding my profits, even though I'm a small businessman, small entrepreneur, I know where my revenue is coming from, and I know who my customers are, and I simply don't have the margin available to think, you know what, you know, one of my major customers or this bracket who is, you know, formerly a major customer. You know, I'm going to be able to increase my prices with them because of something that's happened, as in put up taxes, say, because, you know, the Brits are leaving, you know, the UK is leaving the EU. We're going to put in, you know, trading barriers or increase our taxes towards them, what have you. In terms of being a business myself, I just simply can't afford to do that. And in the same way, when you've got the UK, which is the, you know, world's fifth largest economy, I just don't believe any international business, let's say Amazon even, can do anything other than figure out how to continuing doing business as usual with the UK. So just in the same way as almost overnight, the US has reestablished their open trade relationships. They've just this week reaffirmed a lot of the trade criteria with the UK, Brexit or not. I kind of think in terms of e-commerce, yes, the opportunity will be there. It must be. But I think the big companies are just going to, for now, figure out how to continue doing business as usual, because actually no one has an option to do anything but that. And when you consider that EU law, the UK EU law, commerce over here in the EU has been integrated at that legal foundation since the mid-70s, to really suggest that we're going to extricate us from that, it's going to take decades, and it's going to cost.
They can't undo it. You can't unring
it.
A bell.
Exactly. You're right. So kind of people, you know, there's a lot of fear, and who knows what's going to happen. And I think that is the increased volatility. And for sure, I think, you know, we've seen funds, we've seen property funds shutting down. We've seen, you know, we have seen outflows already from the big hedge funds in property, things like that. You know, there is increased risk, and people aren't, you know, up for volatility. So there's definitely been covering of positions everywhere. But really, is it going to change the German car manufacturer's desire to sell into the UK? No, we're 40% of their, you know, global business. They're not going to do that. So opportunities, yes. Downside risk, I don't think so. I think it's a great opportunity when you get a stirring up, you know, of the status quo like this, and certainly when people are taken by surprise. For e-commerce, I have no idea. I don't know, you know, at the moment, you know, unless you're buying something overnight on Amazon, you know, that's being sort of delivered by DHL. Otherwise, if you're in Germany, typically you're finding delivery from Amazon.co.uk. You're seeing a UK address. So at the moment, I would say Amazon in Europe seems to have its biggest storage centers based in the UK, and they seem to deliver across Europe from the UK. And I'm sure Amazon will want to, you know, make sure that the cost of that doesn't go up a cent, you know, just because of Brexit. So, hey, Stephen, I kind of, you can probably hear, I don't really know what I'm saying, but I don't think anyone does. And therefore, they're going to figure it out.
I think your point is, look, chill out.
it's just news. Everybody's going to talk about it, but the business of commerce is going to continue because let's face it, people have to sell their stuff, right? And people want to buy their stuff, so they're going to find a way around it. Yeah. So I think you did a good job with it. I know it's complicated. And, you know, I'm just – it's fascinating to sit back and watch that because, you know, here's our country between Canada and Mexico, and some of those same issues – exist, and you see some of the extremes say the same thing. So anyway, all right, I don't want to get back to, I want to get back on track. Well, because it's important to me because I think that, you know, your perspective, and you have products in both countries, so I think it's really important to you too. But how did you get started in this? I mean, you know, you had an e-commerce business, which you no longer sell products like physical products, but go back further than that. I mean, what was? Did you go to school to be a computer guy? Or just to be a business guy?
So I've just turned 40. No, I was at school. I wanted to go into medicine, and you know, back in the mid 90s, I went through college, and then I ended up not sort of graduating. That ended up in the city. Actually, my first job, 1997, was the year of the handover from Hong Kong to China, and my first job was actually in Shanghai on a trading floor. In the Shanghai Stock Exchange out there, and that was kind of mad and cool for a year. I came back to London and sort of ended up in, you know, in the stock exchange and trading Southeast Asian equities in London to, you know, European institutions for about 5 years. So kind of that was my you know, intro into markets and arbitrage and price and you know, seeing the trade there. And you know, following that, I actually left the city, and then I got ordained into the Episcopal Church.
As a minister?
Yeah. I became a priest over here for about 10 years. And that took me out eventually, 2010, that took me out to California to a church out there. And
California, U.S.
Exactly. Yep. Redding, California.
Wow.
Above Sacramento. And kind of the idea was to see how you guys did. Obviously, culture slightly different here in the UK to your, you know, your culture in America. But I wanted to come and find out what you guys were doing right and how there was still such relevance for youth, you know, in your big churches out there. So I had to come, and the plan was always to come back. But something happened to me when I was in America. It was kind of just really transformed, I think, or maybe sort of breathed upon or kind of brought back to life something. You know, we don't have a British dream, you know, it's the American dream, right? And you guys, I don't know how much you kind of see that or believe it, but as a Brit coming out to the States and just kind of being marinated in your can-do culture, you know, my culture back in the UK is kind of a little bit blue-blooded. I'm fairly middle-class, but I did go to incredible, you know, public school where Winston Churchill was, kind of that sort of upper-class set. I wasn't. My dad was actually from the Northeast, where we were just talking about.
But wait. I want to ask something. Hold on. Because are you saying that generally speaking, that the British don't have the same entrepreneurial desire? Generally, they're kind of in a lockstep kind of thing, you know, where you're in this class or in this, you know, this society, this is where you go. This is the normal course for you, James.
I would say
really
everything over the last 30 years has told us, no, we're no longer a class society. Not to harken back to it, but Brexit has shown you that still Great Britain is hugely classist. You know, the working class voted out, the middle upper class voted, you know, in. And what I found in America, which was just so extraordinary, is that I'd been brought up in a world where honor and the family name and that of your father was just so important. You know, you went to the same school, you wore the same club, you had the same. You wore the same tie. You're a member of the same club. You kind of just kind of quite East Coasty, as you might imagine that set might, you know, be over there in New York and Boston. That's much more sort of general feel across the UK, the middle class in the UK. And And what you don't do there, the almost the worst thing you can do in the UK is try something and for it to, you know, go wrong and be a little bit embarrassing and it's all a bit awkward for everyone. Whereas arrived in the States and very, very soon it was apparent to me that when you've got an idea and you know, you've assessed it for risk and you know you're able to make the investment, you go for it, and if it doesn't work, mm-hmm. that is not a failure. You go again and you go again and you go again and you go again, and maybe six times around you've learned enough and you've got lucky enough and you've figured out how to work smart enough that you make it a success and you are suddenly living that dream that kind of is in the core of your being as the United States of America. That thing is so alive, and that really did touch me and my wife, and I think kind of put me back in touch with that market floor trader, you know, that I was in my mid-20s rather than maybe the, you know, kind of priest of, you know, of the 30s. And I just thought, this opportunity here, I arrived in Reading at the kind of height of the subprime fallout, you know, foreclosures were just going crazy, and right there I'd never seen the opportunity to you know, get on the courthouse steps and become part of the auctions and actually start, you know, flipping properties. That just kind of wouldn't have been possible. There wasn't the volume of stock. It just isn't that sort of raw back in the UK or obvious. It wasn't there, but suddenly it presented. And I suppose my first step into, you know, my entrepreneurial journey was seeing that, was arriving in America with a little bit of capital, knowing that I was going to be part of this church, but this opportunity was like once in a generation, and it obviously really was once in a generation, thankfully, because, you know, in so many ways it was awful, but I had to find that realtor, I had to find that broker who was doing that, who I could you know, who I could pitch to, in order to kind of get in a joint venture, and set up an LLC so that we could start, you know, so that I could become part of this opportunity. And kind of that was just one of a number of things that happened whilst I was in California. Opportunities just existed. And, you know, following that sort of 2012, 2013, that started to, you know, kind of slow down and it was kind of over, and thinking, okay, I need to still be generating capital. I'm here. I'm not actually on a salary. I'm on a religious workers permit, but, you know, we're living off our capital. My family of four out there. What am I going to do? And the Amazon opportunity to become an Amazon seller kind of presented. And I remember the day that I was kind of arrested by the margins that people were talking about that you could do as FBA on Amazon. And I just remember thinking, these figures I don't think these figures are possible in any other industry I've ever heard of. I mean, I'm sure they are.
Well, it probably was in the real estate in that first initial bubble when it was coming out of there, right? You got that opportunity,
sure.
But that was quickly eliminated, right?
Right. Right.
Nothing continuing like till through today, you're seeing today.
No, exactly. So I don't actually remember how I discovered. How I discovered Amazon, how I discovered the opportunity to become a seller there. And I just knew that those numbers were worth investigating, doing some, you know, serious investigation on. And again, I pulled the trigger and, you know, sort of, you know, super quickly thought my model was going to be, you know, investing in VAs and, you know, finding a way by which, you know, I could maximize the opportunity to do the online arbitrage and, you know, scour there are far few sort of store scrapers and things around, you know, 3-4 years ago. And it was, you know, it was a case of just building up a team who could do that. And, you know, looking to learn fast. So that's kind of how I got into the Amazon side of it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the next foray. I mean, how you converted that into the scraping business and into some of the software that you offer. We'll be right back.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com.
I know that's a lot to hear about Brexit, but I'm interested in something. I'm going to talk about it, so hope you don't mind it. In this segment, we talk about, you know, his software, where it comes from, you know, how he's gotten it developed over time. But what's interesting to me is I didn't realize that you could use it for other marketplaces. And so, you know, the premise is this: you take your existing products and compare them to the market in Europe. Compare them to the market in Japan. I think he says Japan online by the time this comes out. You already have products that can sell in those other markets and that there is opportunity on. If you're already getting them, especially if you're getting a wholesale or if they're a private label, this is an opportunity for you. And the software is pretty cheap. You know, think about it from that point of view. That's where my mind went with it. I'm like, ooh, I see an opportunity here. Let's get into the podcast.
All right, we're back and we're talking with James Rugg, and James is, I'll say it again, across the pond. He's from Britain. We just went through the story of how he came to the U.S. and found his way into Amazon. You know, as I was sitting there listening to you talk about it, though, I mean, you know, and I'm not claiming this is a religious thing, but you wouldn't be where you are today had you not been called. Called to cross the U.S. to do that. And now I don't believe that God was saying, hey, go to California, learn how to flip real estate, and you'll be an Amazon seller. I don't mean that way. But you know what it is? It's important to note, though, that you paid attention, you notice things, and these opportunities seem to be around you. I would say that most people don't notice things, don't pay attention to the places they've been in their life and the things that, you know, everybody's like, oh, what's the skill set that I need? My opinion is you probably have – everybody has it. They just have to recognize what theirs was, their piece of it, right? Because there's so many pieces to this business. Yeah. They're an expert in some of it. They just don't realize it wasn't called that. It was working in market arbitrage, or it was flipping real estate, or sure, it was customer service. All those things are important in this business. Most people have been exposed to some facet of this business in a different way, and if they recognize that, they can capitalize those strengths. Okay, so you come back. Were you still in the U.S. or did you head back to England at that point?
So 2013-14. Story goes on. It was I was expecting to come back into ministry on this side of the pond, and but I wasn't kind of sure where. I had been in parish, and anyway, for me, my dream job came up in just one of the great public schools. We call them public schools, actually one of the great private schools back here in England, to be the chaplain.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of...
good for the kids, good for the family,
yeah, just,
kind of everything
yeah,
you want.
Just,
yeah,
just was a really amazing feeling. I'm passionate about sport and music and obviously business, and you've got kids coming in who are just geared to that, and you know, it all just looked good. Anyway, so I... So the school, took me back over there and interviewed me, and actually two things happened. The first was that they didn't hire me. I didn't get the job. I was, super surprised that I didn't get the job. And then, on the back of that, I actually didn't get my religious worker visa renewed in the States. And so that was just a massive moment for me, sort of late 2013, beginning 2014, my plans were kind of shot, totally shot. I didn't have any. Suddenly, I didn't have any clear idea as to what was going. You know, America had been amazing. You know, in terms of the business and the people I'd met and what I'd learned and the involvement I'd had, and Amazon was great. But actually, I always expected to come back into ministry. And suddenly, the presentation was, okay, James, What are you gonna do? What are you willing to compromise on right now? And what are you willing to risk? You know, what's so for me, it was a case of, look, do I want to take an easy option? And for me, the easy option would have been just to sign up to parish ministry again and go back and, you know, be a local minister and, you know, for four or five churches locally and do that thing. And I just knew that would have killed me. You know, America was so I just couldn't come back to that. Or was I going to try and get a, you know, go back to full-time employment with someone else? And I kind of didn't feel, having been out of the market, been out of profession for, you know, as many years as I had, probably 15 years maybe by that stage, I didn't feel as though I really had a skill set that I could put together on paper and, you know, really clearly pitch myself to a company. Or did I look at this Amazon thing? And so I just thought, well, you know, chatting to my wife, just going, there is a possibility of taking this, you know, back to the UK. Obviously Amazon UK is growing and is large, and Amazon Europe is super, super significant. But when I looked at the numbers, and what I had at that stage was just my own team of 12 VAs in the Philippines sourcing me products.
That's a lot. I mean, I've got lots of friends in the business, of course, and they've got two or three. I know somebody who has, I think, six.
And
that supplies many different people.
Okay.
To get to the level of 12, that's enormous, dude.
Yeah.
That's a company.
I don't know how.
I mean, that's a pretty good sized company.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I went there early because I wanted to quickly invest the capital that I had. It was probably a little bit more than, you know, most people, had. And I just knew that volume was going to be absolutely key. And, you know, it's, for me, it was a turnover game. And I have to find that velocity, and that means that I didn't have wholesale accounts at the time, and so it had to be. And I didn't really land too many particularly awesome replens. So it was kind of, you know, it was really churning and burning, and actually.
Yeah. So you must have been going through hundreds of products.
I was going through hundreds of products. I mean, I actually wasn't huge. I didn't hit more than $25,000 in sales in any one month. I just got
but
there.
Still,
so it wasn't huge.
Part of that, though, would be the inefficiency of that, because if you're not getting, like you said, a replan, right, something that you can buy, that you can scale purchase, you're just, you know, you're spending a lot of time just one listing, and you know, the online orb model, it's a lot of work. Tracking and, you know, sharing data and communicating with your, because you were using a prep and ship company.
Exactly,
for you?
Exactly. So it was
that's a lot of work. Yeah. Please don't do that, anybody, because it's as you say, it's too much work,
it was so much work. And when I looked at taking it back to the UK, and I looked at the really shipping costs, and you know, when I looked at the UK market's actually so interesting. It's probably a little bit more advanced and a little more commoditized than the American retail market, and because of that, it's actually, you know, you haven't got the, you know, the price disparity that you've got within the UK. I feel there are far fewer arbitrage opportunities, you know, online and retail arbitrage opportunities than there are within the.
But were you buying and shipping from the UK and around UK and around Europe, or were you having it done shipped to America and processed here?
No, I was purely American based, so I was buying America and selling America. So when I looked at going home, I wanted to retain that. Well, I looked at the UK, tried to put my guys to work in the UK, and didn't find the product in the volume that I needed. And so I was left with this incredibly, you know, rich vein of products, with my team, but not the, you know, not the prices that I needed to really be sure it was a goer. And so it was at that stage that I actually created Daily Source Lists.
Okay, so let's stop there, because I want to talk about that.
Okay.
Because you have a service, it's called the website's Daily Source Tools, and I'll have a listing for all this stuff. But you have several different source list, and this is how you got there. So basically you had it for yourself. When you were in the U.S., you decided to go back to Europe. And, well, you didn't decide. It was decided for you that you're going back to Europe. But you had a team that was able to give products. And these are pretty deep quantity of products. I mean, I'm reading it. I'm going to go through them. There's four levels I see here. Restricted 20 and elect list. $198, 20 person list. So it's limited to only 20 people, averaging 10 items a day, and it gives you the categories in electronics, for example. So if somebody wanted to get into electronics, which I do hear a lot of people talking about, this is geared towards that. That's different than most people, by the way. Although I know some people who do shoes or clothing, they're very specific. You've taken on electronics. Then you have another category for home. Buy from home. What is this? So this is dedicated to fast turning.
So the one you've just spoken about there is that restricted category list and electronics. So on that list, you'll get beauty, you'll get shoes, you'll get grocery, you'll get those items there. And then the other two lists, again, they are all unrestricted categories. So that's kind of...
But they're to buy it fast, sell it fast, and move on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So because you're not typically getting the replens on the unrestricted lists, the 60 and the 25, and that relates to the sort of numbers of people on each list, 60 and 25. They are higher volume, they're higher volume items, yeah.
And these are all online deals. None of these are in store, so you don't have to go, so you can buy them online.
Yeah.
And then the last list, the ultimate source.
Yeah, that's
that's a big one. That's a combination of both.
It is. It's your combo. I should probably throw that third one in there as well. But that's the combination of the 60 and the 25.
It would probably make it more attractive if you did include the other one. I mean, it's just as a thought. Okay, so there, the prices are out there, and I'll have a link for that. And so that service is available, and what I do appreciate is that the fact that you limit the number of people, because that is an issue. I mean, when I've seen some groups as large as 100 or 200, and the theory is this, and it's correct, not everybody will buy the same items, right? Not everybody has the same sourcing budget, that kind of thing. But when you really do limit it down, you really can narrow down the focus.
It's right? a very interesting moment in the market, and actually there are a lot of pretty, I would say the competition on these lists has gone up tremendously in the last couple of years. 2 years ago when I first launched, there were not many. Now there are many different ways and many different lists that you can consider sourcing, and some are better than others. And I think making sure that you choose a list where you are as certain as you can be that list is restricted to the number and a small number, and that list is somehow secured so that it's not being shared. Those are huge things to consider. Yeah.
And I also think that people have to be comfortable with who they're getting the list from. And I tell people, you try them. I'm in a ton of lists. I get in a lot of them a lot of times for free. I generally don't buy from them, but people want me to see them and look around at what they are. And my theory is that you can connect with certain people.
It's so true.
I mean? There's a connection.
And so
you got to find out who you want to connect with. I wasn't asking you to put me in. No, you don't need to.
I don't even know if I've figured out the connection. Someone was chatting to someone yesterday, like, hey, James, tell me about this. I was like, are they good? And I was like, I actually don't. 2 years in, I still don't know how to answer that. I've got clients on the list who've been in for 2 years who think it's awesome.
That's a good sign.
It's a good sign. Right. And I also have people who come on for 3 days, sign up, and the next thing I know, they've been super excited. The next thing I know, PayPal's telling me that I've got a dispute against me for selling
junk
to them,
and it's
rubbish. And I like I don't get how there is such a breadth of opinion about these. And I think it comes down to probably, where that seller is in their business and what they're hoping for, expectations, stuff like that. But it is crazy that, the same product can be, you know, hailed as the greatest thing over an extended period of time, and the same product with someone else can just be considered a pile of, you know, refuse. It's fun.
Well, I think the expectation, right? So if somebody comes in and their business is in trouble, and they come in thinking you have the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the lights, the clouds open up. It's, you know, it's the answer.
Yeah.
And it isn't, because they have a problem in their business, that any list is not going to be the solution,
yeah.
Right? You really have a fundamental. Yeah. Then I think it's, they probably have gone through most of those. And so, you know, I don't want to criticize anybody, but that's what happens. But again, I think people have to find a comfort level with who they're working with. And that's why they all should exist. I love the fact that there are so many of them, because I think people find one that they settle in, mm-hmm. and then they can work with that person and work together to make it better.
Yeah.
All right, so that wasn't good enough. You decided to start scraping.
Yeah, kind of scraping, I guess. That's probably
that's
not
my
quite
term.
The,
I use that term.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of scraping. Data out there. I kind of would say no, I'm not. It's so I've got a, you can go and check it out at www.pricechecker2.com, but it's a software that we made in order to process product lists. So it's kind of, it's actually not a scraper in that it doesn't scrape websites. It takes your product list of UPCs, EINs, ISBNs, ASINs, even your own seller SKUs, whatever, and it pulls the Amazon API data against those products. And it does it super quick and, you know, pulls straight from that and just, shows you very quickly what the, you know, the great items are to buy. And so typically we made it, originally we made it for wholesale lists, found there was a need for guys there. So up until this moment, it had all been online arbitrage with my list. And then kind of need, you know, we saw the need emerge for, you know, just high processing speed. So that's what this, my latest software is, which we launched in in February in 2015, is called Price Checker 2. It just checks the prices for you, super quick, against any list you have. Latterly, and recently, kind of with, you know, with the use of some other software out there, it's actually becoming, you know, picked up by people who want to do Amazon to Amazon flips, and particularly Amazon to Amazon flips across different marketplaces. So what's cool about our software is that it's, you can pick it up, you can run something in the States, and you can, you can use it to show you the arbitrage opportunity Amazon to Amazon on, let's say, Amazon Germany or Amazon UK. And I would say the number one opportunity today for the US-based Amazon seller is selling onto the European platforms. It is absolutely huge for a number of reasons. We can talk about it, but
it's the wild, wild west. I mean, you know, it's just wide open.
Yeah, I mean, it is actually wide open. When you look at the size of the German marketplace, which is bigger than the UK marketplace, it's actually very, very established. Obviously, with Germany, you've got, you know, the additional language barrier. And you know, obviously, you've got to figure out how to, let's even say, into the UK, get your stock over here. But what you'll find... when you know if you take the time to take some great products, let's say you take 1,000 products, you know, from any category, and you have a look at the price differences in the UK, not only will you see that they are, a lot of those products are selling for a significant premium, they're listed in pound sterling, they're selling for a significant premium, but also on similar rankings, but also the competition on those items is so much smaller. So you might have a great toy. I think it's true to say anything between a factor of maybe 10 and 30 times less competition on really top end items in the UK and Germany, and Italy is becoming huge. Spain is becoming huge. France is really growing. It's massive. So we're lucky because we build a software that's got all of the foreign exchange live FX integrated into it. So let's say if you are running your American list and you wanted to run it to Amazon France, you could output your profits back into US dollars, but it would take the live French currency, live euro currency, on Amazon France, and sort of process back to you in US dollars. So that was a huge pitch on our software, but that's kind of where I see the momentum at the moment, as maybe opportunities in online arbitrage and retail arbitrage narrow. As we consider the space, the big question for all of us is, is what is happening to the retail space? Who can figure out first the real intention of Amazon and the real intention of Alibaba on this space, and who can see those trends emerge soonest so that we can position ourselves in front of the new opportunity that will emerge. And that is the big, that is the big question, I think, of the day for us all. But it's certainly, in my sense, is that the way to secure your short, medium-term future as an Amazon seller is to establish relationships with distributors and manufacturers. Is to look away from the stores. If what's happened to Walmart in the last 3 or 4 years can happen to Walmart, and they can get so desperate they can just that they are now looking to try and copy Amazon Prime in order to kind of plug the holes in their sinking ship, then that has got to be representative of the effect that Amazon is having in its efficiency, in its logistics, in the way it's positioning itself as a leader of data and commerce. That's got to be happening across the consumer retail space. So for me,
it's happening to us small businesses,
right?
I mean,
right.
That's the point. It's happening. I see people commenting out in these Facebook groups, and they're talking about, hey, this one's getting closed, this one's getting shut down, this one's getting controlled. What's happening? As you're saying, Amazon's efficiently figuring that out and closing another little window here, right? And so your point is, hey, well, I mean, let me say this. I've used the wholesale piece of the software for shoes, because that's what I sell, and that's my main category that we sell in, is shoes. And I've taken it before shoe shows, and have gotten or met people at shoe shows and said, hey, send me your file, the wholesale file. So it's not unlike other software that's out there,
sure,
where you upload the UPCs and you upload different things. But your point is this, is Steve, hey, that's great. And it tells you a whole bunch of things. And guess what? It gave me a list of stuff to buy, and I have a strike price. And that's what you want. When you go in, and if you can negotiate to that strike price,
right,
boom, make the purchase, right? And because you know what it is. If they come in and say, if your strike price is $20, and they come in and say, hey, we can let you have these for $18, great. can you do a little better? But you can go up to 20, and you're in great shape still to make that original margin, whatever it is.
Right.
What I like about yours is you show a couple different scenarios. So, my goal is 100%, but if I can't get that, I can go to 50 or I can go to 30. The other thing it does all the ranking, all the links to Amazon, all the stuff that you want. But what your point is, and I think it's a valid point, is that's all great. That's a great business, and you really need it. But also take advantage of this and now say, okay, Steve, not only do it in the U.S., but do it in U.K. and do it in Germany and these other countries. That's new.
You've got to.
And the ability to do that is just that you've been able to give the powerful tool to do that is a big deal. That's a big deal.
I think it is the biggest opportunity that we have.
Oh, I think you're not wrong. You're absolutely not wrong. Don't go to Canada. I know you can go look at Canada and think you're going to make a gazillion dollars. Brian Vino Beaver will tell you that nothing will sell. Don't do it. But in UK, Sawyer, who's a big UK seller, he'll tell you that is the place to go, because right now it is wide open.
Yeah.
And, it's going to be other countries. I mean, do you see, at some point, other countries opening up in your software? Do you feel like you'll be adding more on?
I guess. I was just chatting about the massive opportunities in Japan right now.
Right.
And I don't know if you have friends who are doing the same out of the West Coast into Japan, but We're going to be adding that to Price Checker as well, because I really do. I don't know. I mean, mine is just one of, you know, a number of tools, and as businessmen today, as entrepreneurs today, we have to use these tools. You know,
right? I was thinking the same thing. There's so many tools, but you have to, because if you don't, your competitor's gonna.
We've got to be using. You've got to be doing whatever you're doing in the most efficient way possible, and that means. Right. Making that little investment and probably having multiple tools to hand and of course we do, and that's not, you know, clever now. That is, you know, that is absolutely standard.
It's a cost of doing business.
It
right.
Is.
So here, let's just put this out. It's $50. It's $49 unlimited. It gives you Amazon.com and Amazon.co.uk.
It gives you all of Europe now. So it gives you UK, Germany, France, Spain, Italy.
Okay, for $49 unlimited. And let me tell you, because you know, I used the software early on, I guess a while back.
Yeah.
And so you made changes based on feedback from me, and so it was very cool though. The first time, you know, you throw a test file in and it's like bloop, done. And I had some files that were they were massive, right? I mean, they were some big files that I gave you. And the stuff was amazing. And once or twice it got hung up, mm-hmm. and then you went in and fixed it and yep. figured out what was wrong. Yep. And then you went in and made some changes about colors to make it stand out. And to me, that's what I like about, you know, these softwares, and is the fact, I guess maybe it's my position and what I do, is I'm able to give feedback and get, you know, but I would assume that as a customer, if I'm a customer paying you, you're going to take my feedback and make improvements logically.
Oh,
so me, that's so cool that I get to talk to the developer or the owner/developer. I mean, it just, to me, that's what I love about these things. This is a big deal. $49, and you're saying, well, just take your lists. You could take your own inventory and run it against them.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Just immediately, you already bought it. You know, it's sitting. It's not selling in the U.S. Guess what? Go look and see what the price is in
UK. Do you do that, guys? I mean, I'm. What's awesome is that I kind of know that Europe feels so far away to you guys, and you know we call things different. We call sales tax VAT, you know, value added tax here. We call LLCs, we call them LTDs. You know, we've got entry and excise duty. We've got different terms and nomenclature and stuff like that. And that is a huge barrier to entry in people's perception about the possibilities or accessing these new marketplaces. But I am telling you, actually, the work that needs to be done for you to set up an LTD here, you know, set up a bank account, get registered with that, and start and find a good prep service over here, and get selling. You know, you will be staggered by the profit margin you can make selling into the UK. It will. I mean, as those who are doing it now, it is a no-brainer. And still, my point is, it will, until you investigate it, it will look as though it's going to be a big deal. But I'm telling you, it is actually a very simple process to set up what you need in order to be a seller over here. And once you've done that, you will be one of the very, very few Amazon.com sellers, you know, US-based sellers, who actually does what's necessary to get over here. And it really isn't a very high bar to jump over. So I just encourage you.
But the fact that it appears...
It appears that it is.
But that's... good.
It's really good.
The barrier to entry looks difficult. Yeah.
It's really, really good. And it's on now. Who knows how long it's going to be on for, but right now that trade is on in a big, big way. You've got grocery, baby clothes, and ladies sanitary is all taxed, is zero rated tax into the country. So the majority of the majority of product that people begin to bring over is that, and you can kind of figure stuff out from there. But please look at it.
Love it. Hey, are you seeing a lot of prep centers open over there as more?
No, I'm not. I mean,
really?
I've seen two open in the last. Really, really great guy, friend of mine. He doesn't know I'm going to give a shout out to him, but I think there are two, there are just two centers that I know about in the UK at the moment. But
would you private message me and then I'll put them in the link on the website?
Yeah, shall I
would you do that?
Yeah, shall I?
Just no. Don't mention them. Nope. Just tell them they're going to make them go out to my website.
Yeah. Force them to do. I mean, particularly, I actually don't know anyone at the second website, but the guy that I'm going to tell you about, he is not only just super, super efficient, brilliant in what he's created in terms of his prep center, but he's also an expert in tax. And so he's got this fantastic combination whereby not only are you wanting somewhere to send your product, but you're also wanting all your questions asked about creation of tax or import duty or VAT. And he is the combination. Literally, he's doing well, and good luck to him. He deserves to. But he is the man. I'll let you know his name and his service.
Appreciate that. Perfect, dude. I'm excited. So what's next? What do you think that you say you're going to be moving into Japan? What do you see next? Do you still see a need for software that people have been saying, "Boy, I wish I could figure this out. I wish I could find that," and nobody is doing yet?
I think the opportunity is with the risk to any software provider right now is that Amazon decides it's time to do that themselves. How long has it been? A month since they've had their repricer out or whatever it is, and it's a bit funky and it's been crazy. And but
they'll figure it out.
They will figure it out.
So
that is the risk to the software service provider right now. That is what I consider my number one risk. Is not perhaps a third party market competitor. It's Amazon. It's Alibaba integrating this so that you no longer need to go outside their system. I don't know how long it's been since Seller Central had a big revamp and an upgrade, but I imagine that will come about in the next couple of years, and who knows what functionality they are allowed. So software, I would say yes, you have to be using software. I think if I had the ability, I think I would be looking to, try and replicate the Amazon database, because Amazon is restricted in terms of the data that it offers. Somebody who is able to make a massive investment and had the ability to collect their data to then resellers and API or make available to software developers and to Amazon sellers themselves. I think that's a really smart move.
Wow. You think anybody, I know, as you mentioned, Walmart's trying to replicate and they're suggesting it. And I know they're adding a lot of vendors. I know a particular vendor right now who's being vetted for them. They're trying the third-party vendor route. I know they've added a lot on, but the question is the distribution. Because, it's just so – in my town, I tell the story, but there really are four massive Amazon warehouses in my town. They're as big as – they're city blocks. They're just massive.
Yeah.
And there's four of them. And it's just so crazy to see them. So I can't imagine anybody else can replicate the warehouse piece. However, they can replicate the data. As you say, the software, they can replicate the ability to get a company's inventory in a smooth way out to the public in a smooth way and have that purchase seem seamless. Now, how it gets processed behind the scenes, that's the challenge. But somebody else will figure that out. Yeah. Eventually somebody will figure that out. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I do think it's – sorry, just to finish up here. We are seeing right now, we are witnessing the emergence of a new retail order. And with Amazon's intentions, with Alibaba's intentions to become the world's fifth largest economy 20 years out. That's Alibaba's ambitions. There are going to be so many opportunities develop for those who are sellers and merchants and distributors and service providers in this space. Like we don't see them now. We don't know what they are. They will be led by the evolution of the marketplace. But Amazon, you can be absolutely certain that being tied into Amazon, riding the Amazon wave, like understanding the way that they generate revenue, you know, their fee structure, that isn't going away. They are not wanting third party sellers to leave. They are wanting those sellers. They are wanting the volume. Will there be a place for the micro seller in the future? I don't know. But what I am saying is with Amazon, will emerge great opportunities. And I really do think it is important. One of the things I feel best at is that, one of the things that I actually invest a lot of time in is talking to people, is talking to my clients. Like you said, like it is so valuable for me to find a client who's happy to give me feedback and wants to chat about business, wants to chat about what is emerging. We've got to have our radars out, and we've got to be watching for the new emerging trends and the new opportunities, because they will come in their, in their hundreds over the next years, but we don't know what they're going to be yet. I feel that, my software could become redundant tomorrow. I mean, that's the risk that I'm running. It could become redundant tomorrow, but I'm not as much as I obviously don't want that to happen, I am certain that being in this space, I'm going to be able to pivot myself, because there is, this is the marketplace. We are operating in, the number one marketplace with.
Think about, I always tell this to people, the fact that, we all know what we're doing at this point means we have a huge advantage right now, right? If we keep learning and keep evolving and investing, I mean, I just think of how narrow our focus has gotten. Somebody's been asking me that question about, as my interview top 100 people that I've interviewed, has it narrowed my focus? The answer is absolutely. I've gotten nothing but sharper because I talk to smart people and they're like, Steve, narrow down your focus. I mean, you don't have to hear it six times, but to say, okay, now focus. But the learning that you have, the advantage that we all have right now, this is the opportunity. So again, what I like about this is the fact that you're in other markets. I think the fact that you're over in Europe gives you a different attitude than we have here. And I think that that's a value. That's your secret sauce. The fact that you have all those other markets you're a lot closer to the German market than you are the American market, right?
I mean,
distance wise.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's going to keep you into that market as it evolves, because as our market matures, that market starts to develop. And then, imagine eventually when Asia and Africa, I mean, just think of all the different places as they continue to evolve. Dude, I'm really excited that we got time together today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It's really exciting.
It's been awesome.
I will have links for Price Checker 2 out on the website, and the daily product lists. I have that too, daily source tools. Again, $49. Invest in your business. I mean, you have to. Again, if you're not, your competitor's going to. So, James, man, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks.
Smart guy. What I like about him is he's approachable. You could reach out to him. I had an issue. Boom. He fixed it. I love the response. And, I think what he's talking about, let's face it, it is the opportunity. Europe is still the wide open, the wild, wild west. Japan, these markets are expanding a lot quicker, a lot less competition right now. And you already have products. Man, I'm telling you, I see nothing but opportunity. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.